Ladies and gentlemen, if you will all rise, we will have the invocation delivered by the Reverend W.W. Cutler.
Our Father and our God, it is so good to turn to thee, to know that thou art waiting for us to come. Looking back, we can see so many things for which to be thankful. And we come to thee with gratitude in our heart for all the good things. We do thank thee for the leadership of our community, and this instant tonight of our school. We pray that thou would help all the members of the board across the years that have served under Mr. Grant, their families, Mr. Grant and his good family, to know that out of this expression of our gratitude there is that which we'd like to say, but so many things we cannot say. So tonight we do pray that thou would help all of us to somehow express through our silence as well as our words that which we feel in our hearts. So may this hour together be used to lift up those high ideals for which he has stood across the years, that we might project them into the future, knowing that as we walk in the shadow of the past, we will build more securely in the future. So bless the food to the nourishment of our bodies, that we might be better able to serve in the days to come, and use all of this to thy honor and thy glory. Amen.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is indeed a very distinct pleasure to come before you this evening on this wonderful occasion of honoring one of our community's most distinguished and accomplished citizens. It is a genuine personal privilege for me to participate in the singling out and paying tribute to a man who has devoted almost his entire working life to the educating and the developing. Take it away on the far side. Thank you, classical music lovers everywhere. It should be quite obvious to all that the program and proceedings here tonight are destined to be rather solemn, and certainly on a serious level. And in all honesty, I think that this is as it should be. After all, the occasion for our being here tonight is to honor and pay tribute to a man who, after 30 years of hard work in our community's largest and most important public institution, does not have the complete backing of all 86,000 residents. This fact, I believe, is a serious matter. And it is a fact, I feel, because I'm sure it's safe to say that Lester J. Grant is not liked, he is not admired, and he has lost the support of all people in Decatur who want a second or third-rate educational system, or whose personal or selfish interests transcend the maximum benefits to our children. And seemingly, the support from several people who, despite the benefits they themselves obtain from their own good education, fail to see the wisdom of providing genuinely good and continuing education for future generations in the face of the population explosion and in the face of current inflationary trends. I'm sorry that these me-firsters couldn't be with us tonight on this solemn occasion. But the more I think about it, I really doubt that those 17 people who want a second-rate school system, or those 8 men that I know who say, to heck with the kids and their future, or even that other handful of fuzzy thinkers I referred to, I really don't feel this distinctly small minority would understand what we're talking about, even if they were here. They couldn't possibly understand, I'm sure, why over 600 people would gather here tonight, buy tickets, pay babysitters, even pay to park your car, and give up their time in order to extol the virtues, pay tribute, and express genuine appreciation to a rather quiet, unassuming, totally dedicated, and highly competent guy named Lester Grant. But I know, and of course you know, what Lester Grant has done for Decatur and what he stands for. And that's why we're here. And I also want to assure all of you, ladies and gentlemen, and especially you, Lester Grant, that there are literally thousands of other citizens in Decatur and other parts of the country from all walks of life who share our admiration for you and for what you have accomplished for all of us. You know, to me, Lester Grant is a giant of a man. In his wisdom, in the scope of his thinking, in his accomplishments, his ideals, and his unswerving devotion to the attainment of the very best in public educational opportunity for all children in all of Decatur. And so you'll know just how I feel about him. I'm going to ask that a picture be unfurled, a giant picture, one that befits a man who has thought, performed, and produced in a truly big way. The only thing I can say about this picture is that LBJ didn't like his either. Seriously, and I am serious, I say Lester Grant is a giant of a man. But you know, for a giant, he apparently had one of the most unauspicious beginnings of anyone I've run across lately. He was born on New Year's Eve, the very tail end of 1906, in Bunker Hill, Illinois. Now, you can very rightly ask, where on earth is Bunker Hill? I looked it up. It's a tiny little community in Macoupin County, just a few miles southwest of Wilson, which, of course, is a hop and a skip southwest of Benalde and Gillespie, all of which is down that way towards Alton somewhere. I contacted the Bunker Hill Historical Society, and to be perfectly frank, they've never even heard of Lester J. Grant. The only thing that they could come up with about the year 1906 was that there was a big earthquake and fire out in San Francisco that year, but the records down there indicated that it didn't affect anyone in Bunker Hill. I also can report on brief conversations with some folks from both Wilson and Gillespie, and they never heard of Lester Grant either. One informant from Gillespie did recall that there was a big financial panic in the U.S. in 1907, shortly after Lester Grant was born, but my informant sincerely doubted that there was any connection. And so it would appear that the man whom we are assembled here tonight to honor and recognize grew up in relative anonymity, little realizing the complexities and challenges of life that lay ahead of him. I think it's safe to assume that little Lester Grant at age 7 in 1913 didn't care a snip that the 16th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was ratified that year, giving Congress power to levy a federal income tax. Or that 4 years later, when he was 11, the United States bought the Virgin Islands from Denmark for $25 million. Whether the U.S. passage of prohibition against the sale of liquor when Lester was 14 created any special hardship for him, frankly, I wasn't able to learn. But I did ascertain that in the same year Henry Ford sold his 10 millionth Model T, they were selling for $290 a piece at that time, Lester J. Grant in 1924, at age 18, was graduated from Bunker Hill High School. Evidently, the formalized requirements to become a teacher back in 1924 weren't as exacting as they are today, because the records do indicate that Lester Grant began his teaching career in 1925, a year after completing high school, in the town or district of Wilsonville, Illinois. From what I could learn, he taught in an elementary school, which I expect was a good thing, since the way I figure it, he had just barely started shaving regularly. Things must have been really swinging down in old Wilsonville in those days, since apparently Lester Grant stayed on this job for 4 years. Of course, these were the Roaring Twenties, which also saw the introduction of the first talking pictures and Colonel Charles Lindbergh's winging historic flight alone across the Atlantic. In this spirit of innovation, change, and adventure, Lester Grant left his job in Wilsonville and pushed northward in 1929 to pursue his own education and career. For reasons I suspect having something to do with finances, he ended up in the fall of 1929 in Monticello, Illinois, with a teaching job at the Lincoln Elementary School. Some of my informants have speculated that his northern destination was actually Chicago, but the famed St. Valentine's Day massacre in Chicago early that year detoured him to Monticello. It's been verified that Les Grant hasn't really thought much of Valentine's Day ever since. Reliable information on Grant's activities beginning in 1929 in Monticello is also rather sketchy. In interviewing some old Monticello residents, I learned that Grant made frequent trips out of town, and that many thought him rather bookish, and that he didn't carouse around a lot, as much as the other guys his age. One particularly gabby Monticello native thought it was even darned peculiar that Lester Grant did absolutely nothing unusual on December 5th of 1933, the day Prohibition was repealed. But they did all seem to agree that as a teacher, he was good. Determined to really get the facts on Grant in Monticello, I finally mustered my courage the other day and went directly to Grant himself. I asked him, "Lester, when you lived and taught in Monticello, why did you make frequent trips out of town? And why were you bookish? And why didn't you carouse around, like, at night and in the summertime, like all the other guys were doing?" And Lester answered me rather simply, "Because I was going to college while I taught in Monticello. I received my bachelor's degree in education from Illinois State Normal University in 1934. And believe me, those were tough years." And so, ladies and gentlemen, in 1934 and 5, while the FBI was hunting John Dillinger in Chicago, and the Italian army was hunting Haile Selassie all over Ethiopia, Lester J. Grant was hunting his livelihood as well as a higher education between Monticello and Bloomington. And in 1936, as we all heard the static-filled radio proceedings of the crowning of the Prince of Wales as the new Edward VIII, King of England, our own Lester Grant was ascending to the principalship of the Lincoln School in Monticello. And in 1937, just the following year, as Amelia Earhart took off for an unknown destiny across the Pacific, Lester J. Grant took off for an equally unknown future in Decatur, Illinois. He started in September of that year as a teacher in social studies at Roosevelt Junior High School, and thus began his career in education that was to span 30 years here in Decatur. The rest, of course, is a well-documented and factual story of the accomplishments of an accomplished man. From his first Decatur job as a teacher at Roosevelt Junior High, he was promoted in just 1 year to become principal of Garfield Elementary School, followed 5 years later by the principalship of Woodrow Wilson Junior High. 1 year after that, he was named assistant superintendent of schools, which was in 1944. Lester Grant served in this capacity capably and efficiently for 6 years. His abilities were certainly again recognized and verified by the fact that he was named Decatur Superintendent of Schools effective October 1, 1950, 17 years ago this fall. A quick recitation of the dates and positions held in such an active and distinguished career can hardly tell much of the human side of the story of what really went on during this 30-year span. And such a rundown can certainly not reveal the inner thoughts of the man who lived them. For that reason, I am again going to depart from absolute documented fact and speculate a bit. And I'm going to do this by way of a mythical personal diary, the diary of Lester J. Grant, Superintendent of Schools. Here we go. May 21, 1932, the happiest day of my life. Lorraine and I were married. August 26, 1936, received my master's degree in education today at the University of Illinois. August 15, 1937, looked for a place to live in Decatur. We rented a nice duplex at 1649 North Water. We'll move next week. May 4, 1944, this was when Lester was principal of Woodrow Wilson. I'm going to try and help a boy today. I'm seeing that he gets an F. Ladies and gentlemen, Lester Grant did see that that boy received an F, and I think he did help him. That boy went on through school, was salutatorian of his high school graduating class, won a Millikan scholarship, was graduated from college, passed his CPA exam, is married, has three children, is an elder in the Presbyterian Church. As a matter of fact, that boy was in charge of the auditing team that audited the complete books of our school system in 1965, and I hope they were right. I'd like to call on now the boy who got an F because of Lester Grant, Mr. Russell McCann.
Mr. Grant, ladies and gentlemen, my story of Mr. Grant starts just shortly before this report card was issued by Woodrow Wilson Junior High School. It's the report of Russell McCann, Class 7A, and it's signed by Lester J. Grant, Principal. When I started junior high, I was straining for independence and really at a crucial stage of my personal development. And yet, I couldn't even cope with the new freedoms that junior high brings. I was in a group that pushed the teachers to the limit, and I'm sure that maybe the teachers even shed a tear when they found out who was going to be in their class. One of our favorite pastimes was seeing who could get out of the school the fastest after the last class. We soon found out that after that bell rang, the teacher was so busy helping students that she couldn't see us. And we found a new way out of the school. The window. Guys, that was a fast way out. And this went on for quite some time until on the floor below us, a teacher happened to be standing at the window looking out, just as I went flying by. The next morning, I received an invitation from Mr. Grant to come and visit him. He talked with me, and I'm sure, thinking back, that I probably denied everything at least 10 different ways. But the outcome was inevitable, and Mr. Grant, the educator, scored a tremendous success in student discipline that day. My punishment was to report to his office every day at 7:30 and sit there while the teachers reported in and stay there until school started. In addition, I was to receive an F in conduct for that term. Well, needless to say, I had plenty of time to think about how I could explain this F to my parents. But as the days rolled on, I couldn't think of anything that could justify it. And when the report cards were finally handed out, I was no closer to an answer. So I thought I'd just change that F. I erased and I scraped, but all I did was really just blotch everything. And so I thought, well, if I would wrinkle it and crinkle it enough, maybe the F would be illegible. And so all the way home, I wrinkled it and crinkled it and wadded it and creased it. And that darned F was still there when I got home. Well, that experience was all that I needed. I never had any trouble in school again. And I think that Mr. Grant had found the one thing that would change me from the rowdy pest into an eager student. And I think that he showed his wisdom in many ways over his life as a fine citizen and as an educator. But in this particular case, he just knew boys. He knew what I needed, and I'm very glad that my path crossed his.
Thank you, Russ. Again, returning to our diary, July 1, 1944, assumed duties as president of the Lions Club. March 26, 1945, attended festivities honoring Decatur High's new state basketball champions. May 17, 1949, school building bond issue passed today for over $2 million. October 1, 1950, officially assumed duties as a superintendent of schools. Now the real work begins. May 12, 1952, our furnace blew up at home this morning at 7:30. I burned my right arm and head.
I don't know if that's the right head or the... That was the entry. I don't know. July 17, 1953. Elected to Board of Trustees of Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund. August 12, 1953. Note that Fortune magazine says 4 million babies will be born this year. The highest number in history and the highest birth rate in 40 years. May I pause here again for a moment? We are all very much aware of the exploding population that has taken place right here in Decatur. This has occurred, of course, because of the high birth rate of the 1950s, plus the influx of new residents to our community. At this time, I'd like to call upon a person who helped cause our schools to become crowded. No, not you, dear. You're still part of the problem. The person I'm speaking of was a newcomer to Decatur back in 1950 and is also a parent of 3 students currently enrolled in our school. It is a very real pleasure for me to introduce one of Decatur's most capable women, and certainly the prettiest, Mrs. Lois Raver.
Thank you, Bill, Mr. Grant, and everyone here tonight. The 3 great social institutions of our country, the home, the church, and the school, for good or for bad, are the foundations of our American society. It is my great pleasure to pay a small part in the tribute tonight to Lester Grant, our superintendent of school, a man who has influenced so greatly the most precious extension of our life on this earth, our children. I was one of the lucky ones. We chose to live in Decatur. There were many reasons for this choice. The size was right, the trees were just so beautiful, and most importantly to a young couple, everyone said the schools were so good. Of course, we didn't have any children yet, but the birth rate was high here, best in the state, by the way, per capita. And we had high hopes. I don't know if it was the water or what it was, but we have 3 teenagers now who were part of the baby boom of the post-World War II that caused the Decatur school population to grow from 7,500 children to over 22,000 in less than 20 years. In 1959, the Committee of 100 was formed to study our school needs, future plans, and problems. I was sent as a representative from an organization that I belonged to. One of the reasons was because I was unhappy that my children went to old schools, my taxes were higher every year, and after all those buildings that we built in the 50s, how could we possibly need more money? Well, let me tell you that Lester Grant, his staff, and the school board gave quite a revealing picture of life in public school district number 61. I learned a great deal about our tax structure and the limitations of our state statutes. I realized that women drive men wild because they oversimplify everything. But this study made me a wiser and, yes, a dedicated supporter of our schools. It's not my job to hinder, but to help. Far too often, we are overly concerned about the poor or the special child and forget that over 90% of the school children are just average. Lester Grant has worked for educational excellence for all of our children. As a member of the Illinois Citizens Education Committee, I have met private citizens who invariably would say, when they were introduced to me, "Oh, you're from Lester Grant's district. Now there's a good superintendent, or you're sure lucky to have Grant over there." They would talk about the growth of our district and how in Decatur, people just can't live on the wrong side of the track. Did you ever realize how our high school boundaries were an almost ideal socioeconomic cross-section of American life? It's a wonderful place to raise a family, and we're proud to say that our children are born, bred, and read in Decatur. It's the superintendent who sets the tone of his school district and provides some of the go spirit, and as would be expected of Lester Grant, he has surrounded himself with a staff of educators who are qualified, dedicated, and just plain wonderful people who have always given more than of their time and talent, way beyond an 8-hour day and a 5-day week. Lester Grant's integrity can never be repaid with words or money. No matter that we at times have failed him in his dreams of a perfect school system, he has kept working within the boundaries that we have given him, always prodding us onward toward better education, never complaining, always the gentle man. Lester Grant, you're an inspiration to our community. I speak as an individual, but I know that all of you join me tonight when I say simply and sincerely, all your efforts have not been in vain. I thank you, my children thank you, and our children's children thank you.
Thank you very much, Lois Raber. And now back to our diary. November 17, 1953. Today, the voters approved a $7 million bond issue for two new high schools, three new elementary schools, and one addition to Harris School. November 24, 1953. Elected secretary of the Illinois Association of School Administrators. November 16, 1955. Today I was named one of the five, quote, most efficient and most successful, end of quote, school superintendents in the state of Illinois by an Indiana survey group. It just makes it sound better, really. February 12, 1956. Watched Garfield school teacher, Miss Carolyn Wilson, on the Gary Moore TV show. I understand she has changed her name. I think it's something like Westfall now. March 27, 1956. Voters approved a bond issue for two new elementary schools, two additions, plus a 40-cent increase in the educational fund tax rate. July 7, 1958. Moved all offices into the new Otto Kyle administration building. November 25, 1958. Elected president of the Illinois Association of School Administrators. January 13, 1959. After three stormy sessions, our Board of Education voted to annex the Lakeview School District. Two board members changed their mind twice. March 22, 1959. Received a PTA National Life Membership Award, the first one ever given in Decatur. September 20, 1959. Read nice article in the newspaper, headlined, Grants Have Fun at Home. We'll call and thank them tomorrow. I didn't find the article, I just found the headline. Again, I'd like to digress for a moment. It's a well-known fact that a successful superintendency depends upon an informed public. And it has often been said that the public's two chief sources of school information are, first, what the parent learns directly from his own school-aged child, and secondly, what he reads in the newspapers. Decatur is most fortunate, I believe, in having the owners and heads of our local newspapers fully in favor and highly supportive of a genuinely first-class school system. We may not always agree with how an article or headline is written,
But I can assure you, they believe strongly in really good education. At this time, it is my distinct privilege to call upon one of good education's strongest boosters, both locally and statewide, the former editor and now currently vice president of planning for all Lindsay Schaub newspapers, Mr. Ed Lindsay.
Thank you, Bill. I don't always agree either. I first met Lester Grant in 1943 when he was principal of Woodrow Wilson Junior High School. Later, I noted with interest the number of times that my daughters mentioned how much their woody background had meant to them at the Madera School in Washington and at Northwestern University. I saw Lester Grant begin to blossom to the educator and administrator that we know. Chosen assistant Ray McIntosh. Together, they conceived a program for full-time school, annual salaries for teachers, cooperation in the summer community playground program, the establishment of study sabbaticals for teachers, and so forth. Because Ray McIntosh left to become the superintendent at Rockford in 1950, and because Lester Grant's stature had risen, structure too, had risen as in his assistantship, he was made the superintendent of schools for the Decatur District. Much of the early post-war II planning had not been fully implemented. There were needed modifications in program and in staff to be carried out. Were dictated by what some of us regarded as a too narrow interpretation at the state level of school love, some of which had its origin in the pre-mechanization planting and harvesting patterns of 19th century Illinois. In 1958, Sputnik 1, the first manned space flight, gave new thrust and insistence to the geographical horizon we had come to know in World War II with a lifting of the knowledge horizon into areas undreamed of by the authors of school textbooks previously written. Much was said of the size of the student population in the Decatur district resulting from the growth in population and from the early and more productive marriages. Much was said of the new buildings that were needed and built. But it's what happened within the walls of the building and within the minds of the pupils that has given Lester Grant his standing among his professional fellow educators in the state and in the nation. He's been concerned that pupils in the Decatur public schools, a larger percent of whom now enter college than entered high school a few decades ago. He's been concerned that they would not find that the kind of lives for which the older school patterns prepared them were obsolete before, as graduates, they were ready to live them. He has built breadth and depth into the Decatur School District curriculum. An item here would be the introduction of conversational foreign language in the fourth grade. He has nourished and kept inspired a year-round curriculum committee to seek quality in education equal to the capacities of the young minds in the classrooms. He cautiously has made it possible for the most capable to be encouraged without discouraging the least capable. He has been concerned with such obvious needs as special training for the handicapped and a broad and basic vocational foundation for those who would go into crafts from high school. And he has been devoted to a program of counseling of increasing competence to help the pupils find their way to full development, and to help the teaching staff find more effective avenues to pupil motivation and inspiration. As Lester Grant looks back on his years in the Decatur public school system, he must find great satisfaction in the things he has accomplished, interspersed with some of the frustrations that are inherent in the profession he's in. I hope that as he becomes involved in new educational ventures, as he must, because he is too young and too vigorous to retire, he will be philosophical enough to forgive the community for some of its brief lapses into anti-intellectualism, official and otherwise. I think he has seen enough of the operation of formal education and indeed of life itself to know that the appreciation of every last parent in the community for a good job of educating their children comes only when the last of the parents of each school generation become grandparents. And as a grandparent who was an early convert, I wish to say, thank you, Lester Grant, for educating the children of this community.
Thank you, Ed Lindsay. Getting back once again to our, what should I say, vehicular diary. May 10, 1959, large bond issue for 5 new buildings, additions, and future school sites was defeated overwhelmingly. April 9, 1960, attended late night board meeting at which G. William Madden was sworn in as Board of Education member. Checked with Decatur Historical Society, and they advised me, to be perfectly frank, they never even heard of G. William Madden. June 12, 1962, received the American Educators Medal Award from Freedom Foundation at Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, one of 14 given in the United States. October 9, 1962, bond issue and tax rate increase defeated. April 18, 1963, received copy of Booz, Allen, and Hamilton Management Audit Report, which was quite favorable. November 10, 1963, heard remarks attributed to Paul McKay of Millikan on their planned design for excellence. Very impressed. Once more, I'd like to pause in our mythical diary. For one of the inherent jobs of any really good educational administrator simply must be the pursuit of excellence. The constant striving to do a better job, to improve, to motivate, to kindle the desire to reach up and out, applying to all people, all employees, and in turn, all students, everyone connected with the particular institution. No one could possibly understand what Lester Grant has accomplished any better than another truly great and outstanding administrator. It is with sincerely great pleasure that I call upon the president of Millikan University, Dr. Paul McKay.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. and Mrs. Grant, ladies and gentlemen, as we've already heard, Lester James Grant accepted his first teaching job in 1925. This means that for 42 years, he has been giving grades either as a teacher or as an administrator. And we've already heard from Russ McCann this evening, one of the grades that he received in 7A at the hands of Mr. Grant. Now, it occurs to me, Bill Madden, that a man who has been handing out grades for over 3 decades ought now to be on the receiving end. And it is not inappropriate for him to be graded in public. And this is exactly what I propose to do. I have before me a report card carrying the name of Lester James Grant. For achievements in building new schools under his administration, what does the record show? 14 new elementary schools, 2 junior high schools, 1 completed, 1 under construction, 2 new high schools, 19 additions. Therefore, for accomplishment as a builder of new schools, Lester James Grant receives a grade of A. For honors received as an educator, bringing credit to his school district and community, what does the record show? We've heard from the diary a partial recitation of these awards, ranging, as Bill Madden has said, from president of the Illinois Association for Supervision and Curriculum Development in 1950 to a very recent award where he was invited to Williams College to attend a very special Humanities Institute. In summary, For the honors he has brought Decatur, through the recognition he has received from state and national groups, Lester James Grant receives a grade of A. For deportment and citizenship, for the conduct of his personal and professional life, living beyond reproach as an example to students, colleagues, and friends, Lester James Grant receives a grade of A. For his ability to inspire loyalty among his administrative staff and their unwavering confidence in him as an educator par excellence, this is achievement that must not go unacclaimed. And for this intangible asset, yet one that is the hallmark of a true leader of men, Lester James Grant receives a grade of A. In summary, A for administration, A for ability, A for conduct, deportment, and citizenship, A for the loyalty he commands among his close associates and colleagues. These are not, I assure you, grades gratuitously given. They are grades laboriously won over these decades of devoted service and accomplishment. As far as I know, there is no Phi Beta Kappa for school superintendents. Perhaps we should start one. If we did, the man we honor tonight would be a charter member, like Ben Boo Adem, like Lester James Grant. May their tribe increase.
Thank you very much, Paul McKay. Once more, returning to our diary, just a few more entries. May the 8th, 1965, a $3 million bond issue for a new school building passed today. November 22, 1965, carefully noted Herald and Review article announcing list of 49 possible new names for our five new schools. I don't know why you think that's funny. I don't know. Let's drop it. February 19, 1966. Received the Illinois Taxpayers Federation report of their study of our school district. Their findings were highly complimentary. September 27, 1966, announced my retirement next July 1st to the Board of Education. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen, many of the highlights and joyous moments, as well as a few of the disappointments, obviously, of our friend, Lester Grant. There really isn't much more than I can add to the eloquent and enlightened remarks you have heard from the others this evening. Quite obviously, there are countless things that Les Grant wouldn't enter into a diary, even if he had kept one. There is a long list of both physical and academic accomplishments, all of which have had or will have great benefit to our community, such as seeing the 18 new schools and 19 major additions built during his superintendency that Dr. McKay mentioned, seeing a staff grow successfully from 350 to 1,000 to care for an enrollment that has grown from 9,500 when he became superintendent to something like 22,000 students, seeing major program improvements, including Head Start, expanded programs for the handicapped, for the disadvantaged, for the gifted, for the vocationally oriented, plus, of course, new math, new science, and new directions in foreign language, plus launching new central libraries in part of our elementary schools, seeing a new area adult continuation school started, seeing a new area vocational school started, seeing Lakeview win the Pacemaker and Kettering Foundation Awards, seeing outstanding local athletic team participation, including 9 appearances among the revered Sweet 16 basketball tournament in the past 17 years, plus, of course, 1 state basketball championship in 1962. Evolving wholesome relations with mutual respect and cooperation between minority racial groups within the school. Believe me, I could go on and on. My friends, I say again, Lester Grant is a giant of a man. In his accomplishments, in what he set out to do and has done, and in what he has unswervingly stood for during these past 30 years. You know, I'm awfully glad that we have all taken the time to hold this recognition dinner tonight. In far too many cases, I suspect, a great many of the real doers in the world, such as Lester Grant, are never really told, and especially right out in public, so to speak, what a genuinely good job they've done. That's why I'm glad we're all here, so that we can tell him, face to face, that we're proud of him. Of course, we all know that words are fleeting, and even difficult to recall later on. So at this time, I'd like to call upon a very distinguished gentleman who is going to present a more lasting tribute to Lester Grant. It's my pleasure to introduce the Vice President of the A.E. Staley Company and a longtime friend of good education, Mr. Roy Rollins.
I have some sympathy for Mrs. Raber and Mr. Lindsay and Dr. McKay. When you try to follow a Bill Madden act without a dog and pony show, you're in some trouble. Giving a lasting tribute, and naturally I put together about an hour and a half talk, and then I talked to the program committee, and they said earnestly, and I thought a little threateningly, 2 minutes. So without telling them, I compromised a little on the time, but we'll still have you out of here by 10:30, so you have nothing to worry about. Reading other people's mail is always fun, as you may have found out sometime or other. The best part is gossiping about it, and that's what I intend to do. I obviously can't read all of the letters that came to Lester. They didn't come directly to him, you understand. We intercepted him some on this occasion because there was really a great outpouring from former board members, from noted professors, university presidents, civic organization, businessmen, and a wide variety of others. But I'll give you a small sample. I'll only identify a couple of these. There is a limit to how much gossiping even I should do. First one I like says, "This is a switch. You're not even dead yet, and we're telling you what a nice guy you are." This one is from a man that I admired a great deal. And I will identify him as the man that Lester succeeded as superintendent of schools. Mr. McIntosh says, "One of the interesting phenomena of public education during these 25 years has been the increasing public awareness of the importance of the public schools, the increasing public demand for change, the increasing public resistance to paying the cost of change, and finally, the increasing tendency on the part of many otherwise intelligent people to resort to the age-old practice of repudiating able leadership as the solution to the problem." This one says, "I feel certain that you are one of the quiet great ones whom I have had the good fortune to know." This was from the NAACP, and I liked it. Says, "The Decatur branch wishes to express appreciation for your service to the public schools of Decatur. We have had a pleasant association with you through the years and have found you always ready and willing to talk with our representatives and to give careful consideration to the facts presented. We recall especially the efforts you made in behalf of a resolution by the Board of Education in favor of open housing. This one, and there were several that said much the same thing as this one said, the years I was privileged to serve on the Board of Education were most interesting, due largely to your fine leadership. This one I don't really understand about. I think it's an outside joke. It says, Les, if you want the flagpole set on the other end, I think I'm inclined to go along with you. This is a typical line from many of the letters, but I thought very well said. The citizens of Decatur shall be forever indebted to you for your wonderful service, not only as a capable administrator, but also as a fine Christian gentleman who has set a worthwhile example for the young people coming under your good influence. This one says, as a member of the Board of Education of District Number 25 back in the 30s, I always appreciated the work you did here in Monticello, and I am aware of the extra hours you put in to get the work done, especially from the coaching standpoint, which took so many of those extra hours. Now, you see, if I hadn't read these letters, I wouldn't know he used to be a coach. Huh? Only one of these letters did I want to quote entire, and I think I have to identify this one from a clergyman here in town. I don't remember exactly which church, but it's signed Monsignor Powell. So as time goes on, and we cannot escape our relation to it for even a moment, you have not just been a captive of time. You have been deeply involved and profoundly concerned and committed in one of the most important areas influencing the present and the future. You and I hit this town about the same time. I admit that I have kept a close eye on you because of the profound importance of your position and our interrelationships. Very early in this period, and more and more as time went on, I have found out that through the various stresses and changes, along with the countless contacts with realities and personalities, you have conducted yourself with skill and dedication and a good sense of humor. I hope to be seeing you as time goes on. May God bless you and yours always. This one says, I congratulate you as among the best in the nation as an educational leader. Your influence has been felt far and wide. My family wants me to say the same goes for us, even to the son you hardly knew, but who knew you through the eyes of his sister who adored you. This one says, and there were many who said something of this kind, as the father of three boys, I feel that my sons are fortunate to be enrolled in the Decatur school system. This one says, it's been a long time since I first saw you in Old Main at Illinois State Normal University, but I'm glad that both of us stayed put in Central Illinois so that we never completely lost touch. You were a fine student. This one says, this university has enjoyed very fine relationships with the Decatur schools for many years. This is in no small part due to the personal relationships between you and your associates and administrative officials here. And the last one says, for your forthright courage and high professional demeanor, you have received many honors in your chosen field, as well as the profound respect of your fellow townsmen and associates. That last quote sums it up for me, and I can do no better in closing than to say, Les, you have truly earned the profound respect of all of us, and when you read every one of these letters, you'll feel it, as I did. And here they are.
print of it anyway. You can see the rest of it later. Well, the only thing I knew about what was going to happen tonight was that Dick Huff said, after Roy Rollins gets through, you have an opportunity for a few words. And following experiences I've had with Bill Madden's productions, I didn't have the slightest idea what to expect tonight. I feel pretty safe up to now that you haven't heard any more than you have. I did find out, however, through all this experience, that what I thought was a truly loyal staff, that there was an awful lot of talking behind my back. I didn't know just what to think about the kind of production Bill was going to produce. In fact, he told me Monday evening to be ready at 6 o'clock, that there'd be an elephant around to pick me up. I waited till 6 tonight, and no elephant showed up, so I had to come on my own. But I think the kind of production that Bill has demonstrated here tonight and in previous productions that some of you have seen, that it is a proof of something about our Decatur public schools, because he is a product of the Decatur schools. It either proves that we encouraged creativity, or it proves something about the value of our, quote, fine art, unquote, program. Or it may prove that we need more fine art programs. And since this was to be somewhat of a history, or it has turned out at least to be somewhat of a history session here tonight, I'd like to just take us for a second or two through one stage of educational history. Education has changed, but it has a history, and I want to relate this to the what a teacher might do, might have done, with the use of a hen, H-E-N, that is, maybe the little red hen, in a classroom situation, and give you a little historical account of how it might have been related. I didn't go back quite to 1900, but at that date it would have been known as a hen when brought into the classroom. About 1910, it would have been a problem. 1915, a project. 1920, a unit of work. 1925, an activity. 1930, the basis of an integrated program. 1935, a frame of reference. 1960, the hen has achieved a definite status as a dynamic in the group process. And then 1967, today, with our new emphasis on the mental health approach, the hen hardly would have recognized herself as the scapegoat in the frustration-aggression process. Education runs in cycles. I don't know whether 1970 will be back to the hen in its plain language, H-E-N, or not. Well, Bill has omitted a lot of things in his diary, thank goodness. There are some things I might have related, and there is one person here tonight who
will recognize this one. I tried as much as I could to get out and visit in the classroom, and on one occasion visiting an elementary teacher was very intent, as I always was, in what was going on in the classroom, and later discovered after the session was over and she was talking to me, she said, "Did you notice I had my dress, have my dress on wrong side out?" I hadn't noticed, but when she told me, I did. Well, she was here, but she got up and left. I don't know whether she knew that was coming or not. And there's one thing he didn't mention, too. 9 years ago, when we moved into the what was later named the Kyle Administration Building, it had another name. About that time, some of you may recall, it was known as Grant's Tomb. Almost turned out to be that. Well, certainly, may I say, we are deeply grateful to every one of you, very deeply grateful for this whole occasion. No words that I can say can express exactly how I feel, how we as a family feel toward this ovation to our 30 years in Decatur. And I like to think of these many kindnesses that you and others have shown us over the years have been reflected in the kind of quality educational program that we've tried to produce for your children and grandchildren in our public schools. It's been said that your education has been a failure, no matter how much it has done for your mind, if it has failed to open your heart. And I think tonight is proof of the success of education and the opening of your heart. We shall be forever grateful to every one of you who has contributed to our success, these successes that we've achieved in Decatur as a team of public school people, and we'll be forever grateful to you, everyone. Thank you so much.
You all notice a final notation on your program this evening, a line which reads simply, "Lest we forget." There is no man that I know of who can strive for great accomplishments and achieve them, and also be happily married and raise a family without the backing, support, and kind understanding of an intelligent, loving, and devoted wife. Lester Grant has been blessed with such a wife, and we are all greatly indebted to her for what she is. Lorraine Grant is a charming lady of dignity and possesses complete devotion to the same high purposes that her husband has been pursuing these past years. It is a real pleasure for me to recognize her, to thank her on behalf of a grateful community, and to introduce the wife of our former school board president, Mrs. Camilla Huff, who will make a presentation to her.
a lot of trouble. I had a big speech all written out here. Lorraine, would you come up here, ma'am? We did plan our festivities this evening to honor Lester Grant. And although we think Lester is just a great guy, there is another Grant who deserves a lot of recognition. And I know that her support and understanding over the years and her outstanding talents as a homemaker, I'm sure those things have made Les's job a little less difficult. I didn't say easy. I just said a little less difficult. But we'd like to present this tribute to you, Lorraine, for a job well done. Thank you.
I would also like to introduce to you three of the other loves in Lester Grant's life. A real pleasure to welcome and to say hello. I know this must be a proud moment in her life. Lester Grant's mother, Mrs. James T. Grant. And now, two lovely ladies on the younger side, a great joy to their parents, and I'm sure equally proud of their father, Lester and Lorraine's two daughters, Diane and Debbie Grant. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I know you all join me in saluting, in complimenting, and in most sincerely thanking our retiring superintendent of schools, Mr. Lester Grant, and his lovely wife, Lorraine. Before I close, I have two little things I really want to do yet. First, I want to personally thank Mrs. Mary Barnes, one of our former school board members who conceived and organized and served as general chairman for this recognition dinner. Mary? I also want to thank Miss Margaret Bosnott, Mr. Gary Anderson, and Miss Marilyn Mertz for organizing and rehearsing the singing group from Stephen Decatur. Also, Mr. Glenn Fair for bringing his Stephen Decatur band over here. And all of you others who have helped so very much in this tribute to Lester Grant. Secondly, remember I said there were two things. I feel in all fairness, I really must read just a few of the many telegrams we have received here tonight. This one says, to Lester J. Grant, Masonic Temple, Decatur, Illinois, USA. Just heard of your retirement. Urge you to reconsider. We old-timers ought to stick together. Signed, Emperor Haile Selassie. Here's another one, Lester J. Grant, Decatur, Illinois. Best wishes and congratulations. It strikes me that you knew where you were headed better than a lot of us. Signed, Amelia Earhart Putnam. Here's another, Lester J. Grant. Congratulations, Les, old boy, on the occasion of your retirement. You hung on longer than I did. Signed, the Duke of Windsor, formerly Edward VIII. Another one, to the distinguished Lester J. Grant. Heard you were retiring soon. Congratulations. Please consider this my final offer. I'll finance your school system for three entire years if you'll give me back my Virgin Islands. Please pass this on. Frederick the Ninth, King of Denmark. One more. Monsieur Lester J. Grant, Decatur, Illinois. Congratulations, Lester. Stick by your guns. One of these days, they'll be calling you back. Signed, Charles de Gaulle. Thank you.
congratulations, Lester and Lorraine. And may the very best of everything come to both of you in the years ahead. You have the admiration and the really and genuinely grateful thanks of an appreciative community. Good night to you all.